quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
This is Stuart Venner. I tell it as I see it, and I see it as it is.
It was interesting, but it was also stupid.
This is Stuart Venner. I want to welcome you to this week's show. We're going to be speaking to Catherine and Bessie. Catherine is an expert on surviving hair frizz in the summertime, a subject of great importance to me since I haven't had hair in many, many years. We're also speaking to Carl Helvey. 40 years ago, Carl was given a death sentence for lung cancer. He has written a book and has survived lung cancer with holistic means. We're also speaking to A.J. Carosi. A.J. Carosi is Jim Carosi's son, and A.J. is a great entertainer in his own right, and we're going to listen to his newest song. We're also speaking to Carl David. Carl is going to tell us how to survive a suicide in the family. So please stay tuned.
I'm really thrilled to have Catherine Imbesi on the line. She's the owner of Salon Ciseaux. She's a master stylist and colorist, and she actually specializes, her salon does, in curly hair, frizzy hair. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, from a, speaking from a perspective of not having any hair, I think you can really help all of our people that have hair. You're in Florida, correct? Down in Orlando?
Yes, we're in Orlando.
So we've got a lot of elements and things that I imagine are pretty bad for your hair.
A lot, well, a lot of heat, a lot of humidity. People spend the summers in lakes and pools and the ocean, and it tends to wreak havoc on their hair.
How does the heat and humidity impact your hair?
Well, heat and humidity will dry the hair out and make it frizzy. That's the basics of what it will do, and that's usually a look that people don't want.
Now, this is true for people that just don't genetically have frizzy hair?
Yeah, this will apply to any hair type at all. Even if you were born with super smooth, shiny hair, once you either dry it out too much with heat or the humidity gets into it, it'll tend to frizz. A lot of times you hear people say, I didn't have frizzy hair or curly hair until I moved to Florida. So it's definitely the heat and the humidity that's giving that unwanted fuzzy look to their hair.
Well, I can relate to that because I've never had frizzy hair.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people are in the ocean and in swimming pools, which have a lot of chlorine in them. And if your hair is colored, what can the chlorine do? Is it going to make it turn green or some weird color, like Dennis Rodman, maybe?
Well, actually, what a lot of people don't realize is in the pools, it's not the chlorine that makes the hair turn green. It's actually the copper that's in the chemicals in the pool. But what chlorine will do, if you think of chlorine, that's what bleach is. And
right.
That's what we, you know, bleach our clothes to make it look real white. So, chlorine and salt water will both dry the hair out, and they'll strip it of its natural color, and it'll definitely strip it of the any artificial dyes that have been put in the hair. So basically, we advise to stay out of, keep your head out of the chlorinated pools, out of the salt water. But if you absolutely want to go in, always have your hair wet first and with some conditioner in it.
Well, that's
interesting. That just gives a little buffer before the chemical can get to the hair dye that's in the hair.
And I know Orlando's a huge tourist destination. I don't know which is more, either Vegas or Orlando. But, you know, all the people coming here, you've got to be pretty careful who what hairstylist you go to, because people don't have the expertise that you have, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And what are some of the things that you can do to avoid sun drying your hair out?
Definitely, I always suggest that if you're going to spend a long period of time in the sun, to wet your hair first and put some deep conditioner in it. So now you're protecting your hair from the heat because you need that extra moisture in your hair while it's drying in the sun. And then it also, the heat can drive the conditioner deep into the inner layers of the hair, into the cortex. And so you're actually getting a deep conditioning treatment while you're sitting in the sun. If you don't put the conditioner on, you're just drying your hair out, and it'll definitely be less manageable when you go to shampoo it and style it.
I would certainly imagine that's true. And the same thing with frizz. How do you avoid the frizz on your hair?
Well, it's real important to first understand There's a lot to that question. Why the hair becomes frizzy? When you live in the South like we do, or where the humidity is higher, it has an effect on your hair. The humidity and the moisture in the air cause that outer layer of hair strands that are known as the cuticle to relax, and that allows moisture to penetrate to the cortex that I was just talking about, which is the middle layer of the hair strand. The cuticle and the cortex affect the hair's appearance. So when the moisture reaches the cortex, it causes uneven swelling, which appears as frizziness. So there's two versions of frizz. There's the heat frizz and the humidity frizz. And this would be the humidity frizz.
So you really have to go to a correct hairdresser. I mean, you can't just go to somebody at one of these cheap salons and expect your hair to look right. I mean, this is more complicated than I thought.
Yes, and curly hair in general already has a raised cuticle, so it's a whole different type of hair strand. And what a lot of people don't realize is 80% of the population have some kind of bend or curl to their hair. So going to someone who specializes in curl and frizz really matters if you've got any of these issues at all.
I wouldn't think that's true. Are there certain hairstyles that you should avoid? Does that make any difference?
No, it doesn't really make a difference. You just, if you're trying to push your hair beyond its limits, like if you've got really curly hair and the humidity really makes it frizz and you want it pinned straight, you've got to take some steps to protect the hair and be able to keep your hair on your head so that it doesn't get too dry and brittle. If it gets too dry and brittle, it will break, and then there's no point in having a hairstyle that'll cause your hair to break.
Does it help to wear a sun hat?
Definitely, any time in the sun, it is best to have it protected. So, like I was saying, you could use the conditioner, and then having a hat will definitely just keep the sun off your hair, and it will protect both the color and the condition.
Well, Catherine, I've learned a lot from you, and your salon is, again, Salon Ciseaux. That's French for scissors, right?
Yes.
And, you know, if anyone listening to this, if you're in the Orlando area or anywhere close to that, and you got hair, unlike me, you really want to protect your hair. And I really recommend that you go to someone who knows what they're doing. And I don't know of anyone who knows more than Catherine at her Salon Ciseaux. Catherine, can you tell us where your salon is and how people can reach you?
Yeah, we're located in Winter Park, right off of Lee Road, on the corner of Lee Road and Wymore. We could be reached at 407-865-5881 by phone. And we are Salon Ciseaux on the Internet, salonciseaux.com. And that's spelled C-I-S-E-A-U-X. And it does mean scissors in French.
All right. Well, if everybody got that, it's Salon Ciseaux, spelled C-I-S-E-A-U-X, in Winter Park, which is a suburb of Orlando. And if you're down here on a vacation, or if you live here and you plan to leave the house and get in the pool or get in the ocean or get in the sun, I really recommend that you contact Catherine, because you don't want your hair to fall out. Then you'll look like me and then might get a radio show. Catherine, thank you so much for being on the show.
Are you in the terrible position of owing more than your real estate is worth? It just doesn't make sense to throw more good money after bad. At some point, it does make good sense to cut your losses. Don't count on failed government programs that in the end make your problem even worse. We are years away from a housing recovery. Disposing of it incorrectly could create disastrous tax consequences and ruin your credit. You could even pay income tax on the lender's loss. I'm Stuart Venner, president of the Wilshire Holding Group. With over 18 years' experience, we have the proven solution to your problem. A way to dispose of that upside-down property without incurring tax liability and minimize any negative credit. Don't walk away from the property. Call us first. Go to realtycrisis.com or call 877-94-HELP-ME. That's realtycrisis.com, realtycrisis.com, 877-94-HELP-ME. Don't lie awake nights worrying. We're here to help you. Realtycrisis.com, 877-94-HELP-ME. Realtycrisis.com, 877-94-HELP-ME.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Welcome back to the show. I've got a great guest online. We're going to be speaking to Carl Helvey. Carl is a nurse. He's a expert on cancer and using holistic and non-invasive interventions for cancer. And he himself is a lung cancer survivor. He's on Wikipedia. He's quite a famous person, written a lot of books, and I'm just thrilled to have him on the show. Thank you for coming on the show, Carl.
Thank you, Stuart.
Oh, it is my pleasure. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm from upstate New York, and I did not think I'd ever go to college, so I took a business course in high school. My family did not have much money, and so I graduated from high school, and I was given a position at the new hospital in the stock department, and the nurses started asking me to help with things on the units, and I decided I liked that, and so I ended up going to nursing school, and I finished, and then they started pushing baccalaureate, so I went for baccalaureate, and then they started saying people needed a master's, so I went for master's, and then they started saying people needed a doctorate, so I had to get a second master's before I got my doctorate because it was in public health.
I guess they forgot to tell you they needed a brain surgeon, otherwise you would have
right,
done that.
Right, right. And so I became probably, well, I know I was the first male doing public health nursing in the state of California, and then I started teaching public health nursing, and I was the first public health nurse teaching male in the country.
That's fantastic.
And
now, I understand.
So I've never been very traditional, Stuart, and when I got lung cancer and my doctor said chemo and surgery, I said, wait a minute, I don't make snap decisions.
Now, if I read right, that's about almost 40 years ago.
Right.
And you told you had, what, a six-month sentence to live.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Wow. And you cured it without chemotherapy, without traditional medicine.
Definitely. As do thousands of other people, Stuart.
What did you do to cure your cancer? I'm sure it's cured now. After 40 years, I would say cured.
Right, right. Well, I went to an alternative doctor in Northern Virginia, and he prescribed Laetril, which was illegal, but he told me where I could get it. It's actually,
but that was apricots, wasn't it, if I remember right?
Yes. That's the greatest source, is the apricot kernel. And I also ate about 25 of the apricot kernels every day. I took high therapeutic doses of vitamin A, vitamin E. I took a variety of vitamin Bs. I took pancreatic enzymes, which are very important because they soften the shell on the cancer cells and make the Laetril more invasive. I took digestive aids. I was on a diet that was very much like a vegan diet today, which was 75% raw fruit. And
Carl, let me ask you a question. I'm not an expert in this. You are. Laetril, from what I've understood, comes from apricot pits. Is that correct?
Right.
Why would something like apricot pits be illegal?
Because it cures cancer.
Oh, that makes sense. Cancer's big business, isn't it?
Cancer is a multi-billion-dollar industry. Hospitals get wings. Physicians buy chemotherapy wholesale. They sell it retail. They get paid to administer it. The Cancer Society stays in business. The drug companies make lots of money. People make lots of money. And so there's been cures since back in the 30s.
Well, you know, about 40-something years ago, I met a woman in California, and she had written some kind of book. I can't even remember her name. Mm-hmm. But I thought at first she was a little wacky, because she mm-hmm. was telling me that she felt that her life was in danger, that she was really being threatened, because she was mm-hmm. really going into this with Laetril. And she said in Europe they were actually curing cancer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I thought maybe she was a little nuts when she was telling me her life was in danger and she felt threatened, but she might have been right.
Well, I think that there have been people that have been harassed. I know a lot of people that have been harassed and are still being harassed. And I'm sure that there are some people whose lives have been in danger. It still goes on, like Dr. Forsythe, who wrote a chapter in my book.
Uh-huh.
He is having like 48% success with stage 4, 5-year survival cancer patients. The traditional is 2%, so he's a threat. And so they've taken him to court, and he said they couldn't take his license, but they tried to bankrupt him, and so he said it cost a lot of money.
Well, how can you fight the big drug companies that are making billions of dollars off of cancer?
No, you can't. It's like trying to fight Monsanto with our food supply.
Incredible.
You can't do that either.
Mm-mm. Well, you're living proof that it works.
Right.
Do you think that this is curable for all forms of cancer, this treatment?
Well, I've interviewed on my radio show other people that had cancer of other sites, and they were cured also. One person that I interviewed had melanoma, and they had given her 3 months. And I'm 38 years, I think she's now 35 or 36 years.
My God, melanoma is one of the most deadly from what I understand.
Right, it is, right. And she has no problems.
So how can people learn more about you? You've written a book or books. How can they find out more about you?
Well, I have two websites. The website that is around the cancer is beatlungcancer.net, and that is about what I did, and it's all the interviews that I've had since the book came out in November, and mm-hmm. some of the reviews that have been done. And my other website is holistichealthshow.com, and that is a show that covers natural ways to deal with a variety of health problems, and I usually do series, so it's like 4 or 5 months, and I've done arthritis, I've done diabetes, low back pain, seasonal allergies, cancer, etc. And so there's natural ways to deal with all of these, and so that for people that are interested in dealing with things naturally, they will find all of my shows from the last 5 years.
That is fascinating, Carl. And when you got the lung cancer, were you a smoker?
Yes, I was.
I think everybody was then.
Right. It was very fashionable, and all the movies showed people smoking their cigarettes.
So you stopped that, of course.
Yes, I did. Right.
You know, I was a heavy smoker, but two or three years ago, I switched to these electronic cigarettes. And I'm not saying nicotine is good for you, but I'm not getting mm-hmm. those carcinogenics and the tar that I think
right.
goes along with cigarettes, and I find mm-hmm. the thing great.
Well, it's a very difficult habit to break.
No, I don't want to break it now that I have my electric cigarette.
Right, right.
But, I can breathe deeply. It doesn't bother me at all. I don't know mm-hmm. if it's good for you, but it can't be good for you, but I don't think it's bad for you either.
Well, usually the lungs will heal after a period of time, you know.
Did you have trouble quitting smoking?
When it came to the point of having cancer, no. I quit, and I'm a typical ex-smoker. I can't stand the smell of it, and I'm very protective of my lungs. And
well, I don't blame you.
Fortunately, our national laws are such that you don't get exposed to it very much.
Well, I don't blame you. Well, for everyone listening, I'm speaking to Carl Helvey, and almost 40 years ago, Carl had a 6-month death sentence with lung cancer, and he took holistic, natural, non-invasive interventions with Laetril and, I guess, vitamins and diet, and mm-hmm. He's cured. After 40 years, you got to be cured.
Right.
God bless you. That is amazing. So I hope everybody goes to his site and reads this book, because I think it's something everyone should read. Even if you don't have cancer, this can, I'm sure, prevent it.
Well, yeah, I also talk about what I've done for the last 36 years to prevent a recurrence. And a lot has to do with diet, and our diet now is not like it was. When I had cancer, we didn't have to worry about organic food because we didn't have the genetically modified foods, the growth hormones and those things. But now I think anyone that is interested in preventing or has had cancer really needs to eat organic food.
I think you're right about that. I mean, they put so much junk in our food supply today, hormones and these animals. God knows what it's going to do to us.
Right. Right. I should mention, if I may, that I did, being a nurse, I believe in a holistic approach. So I did add some mental and spiritual activities that I did also. The doctor gave me the physical, but he didn't talk about mental, spiritual. So I added things like prayer, meditation, visualization, affirmations. Trying to serve others.
Well, you know, I can't agree with you enough. Prayer is not too popular today in this country, but I think that it certainly can't hurt.
Right.
And we're living proof for it.
Shows.
Combination of everything.
Right.
Carl,
and the research.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Stuart.
You were really a delightful guest, and again, thanks again.
Are you in the terrible position of owing more than your real estate is worth? It just doesn't make sense to throw more good money after bad. At some point, it does make good sense to cut your losses. Don't count on failed government programs that in the end make your problem even worse. We are years away from a housing recovery. Disposing of it incorrectly could create disastrous tax consequences and ruin your credit. You could even pay income tax on the lender's loss. I'm Stuart Venner, president of the Wilshire Holding Group. With over 18 years' experience, we have the proven solution to your problem, a way to dispose of that upside-down property without incurring tax liability and minimize any negative credit. Don't walk away from the property. Call us first. Go to realtycrisis.com or call 877-94-HELP-ME. That's realtycrisis.com, realtycrisis.com, 877-94-HELP-ME. Don't lie awake nights worrying. We're here to help you. Realtycrisis.com, 877-94-HELP-ME. Realtycrisis.com, 877-94-HELP-ME.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Next, we have a great guest online. This is a returning guest. We've spoken to him before, and he's always a terrific person to talk to. We're going to be speaking to Gary Bronga. He's the author of a book, Bringing a Product to Market from Home. He's a guest speaker. He's a mentor to millions of entrepreneurs. And he's the owner and person that innovated and started the Clippies. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. Tell us about Clippies and how you really started in this.
Well, what I did, it was a, I've had several ideas in the past, but this particular idea started when I was at my day job. I worked at the Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, and wearing badges was a big part of our job. We all had to wear ID badges, and we were discussing how we hated to wear them, the methods of wearing a lanyard, which is the string around your neck, how it got in the way, and one guy even mentioned that somebody in his office had got caught, his lanyard had got caught in a shredder.
Oh, my God, that could be horrible.
We were discussing, no one likes how you have to wear them, and they're mandatory most places. And what we did was, as we broke up, a company happened to hand out a lapel pin, and I put that lapel pin on my shirt, and I walked away with my badge in my hand, and when I went to put it on, I attached it to that lapel pin. And that's when the idea came to me. We invented a little space and a bar at the bottom of a lapel pin that enabled us to make many designs and stock designs and do custom designs for companies.
You see those everywhere now.
We sold over 3 million to date.
My God.
That was 18 years ago, and we're in many stores and catalogs. And we started slow. We only made a couple hundred and sold those, and made 500 and sold those, and eventually got into a catalog, and that was kind of an interesting story as well.
Well, I guess, you know, the key to this, I mean, you came up with a great idea, obviously, and it's a success. But a lot of people can come up with a great idea, but how the heck do you market it? And that's, I guess, what you're teaching people.
That's what stops people from marketing their product. They really don't know where to start. It's actually relatively simple. It's not easy, but I didn't have the resources that are available today with small business developmental, and I had a lot of trial and error. And which I put in a book. I wrote a booklet with 48 great tips for bringing a product to market, which is still available on my website for free. And then I expanded that tips booklet into a book. And that's basically what I did, the resources I used and how I progressed through the different stages and where we're at today.
What are some of the simplest marketing processes that most people just overlook, Gary?
Well, most of them underutilize the press release. Once we made a big sale to a catalog, which while I was selling to the individuals, family and friends, I approached catalogs, which is a great way to start. Catalogs buy from you wholesale. They take the pictures and mail out millions and also do online newsletters to millions. And I eventually got one. Of course, that's a story that papers like to see. And I immediately put out a press release. They like to see a local person come up with an idea and then market it in the marketplace. From a press release, it's just amazing what the results can be.
Well, it's also important that way you can brand yourself as an expert, right?
Oh, absolutely. You have to be an expert, and you read everything you can get your hands on in the industry that you're going to sell to. And after you've been involved in it, it's amazing that most people, after school, you'd be surprised how many people never read a book. But it's been a study that if you read 5 books on a subject, you're probably very close to being an expert right away compared to the general public.
I think you're right about that. Is it important to go to trade shows and other public events?
Yeah, trade shows are very important. Trade shows, you meet people that are there to do business. You also meet people that are CEOs and presidents, vice presidents, that you may not even be able to. They may not even return your call during the business hours, and there they are standing across the table.
And I guess being
sociable,
playing golf, going to places, that probably helps a lot.
It does. It does. You'd be surprised how much. Matter of fact, I believe it's Wake Forest University, which is where Arnold Palmer, a famous golfer, had went to school. I believe it's mandatory for a business majors to take golf. That's kind of interesting.
Well, certainly our president does. I wish he'd be more as a president than playing golf.
Yeah, you got a point there. Golf has its places, and you do a lot of business, but there are limits. It is very time-consuming, and when somebody that important, they need to be in the White House.
Yeah, I don't think he needs the publicity.
No, I don't think so.
Joining the Chamber of Commerce.
But getting back to trade shows, they're very, very a great tool.
I bet it is.
I'm a believer in testing, too. There's too many people that go that think of an idea and get a prototype or get it manufactured, only to find out later it doesn't sell. If you can afford it, a trade show, if you pick the right show, which a little research you can do, you'll know right away if you have something.
Is it good to join the Chamber of Commerce?
Yeah, any local charities, your chamber, are very important to establish. Charities, you try to help as much as you can, even if it's to donate your time or your product at a wholesale price, if that's all you can do, because companies like to do business with companies that support their charities as well, and you help the community besides. The chamber, the same thing. Other businesses that you may count on as a customer join the chamber, and they like to do business with each other.
And today, I guess you didn't have that when you started, but social media is a great avenue today.
Right. We didn't have any of that. I've learned it as I went. Matter of fact, we were online in 1995 when I started my company. Yahoo didn't even incorporate for 2 years later, and Google 3 years later.
That's right.
So I've actually been on the web longer than Google and Yahoo. Too bad I didn't grow as fast as they did.
You know, if anybody's listening, anyone who's listening to this, and if you have a product and something that you want to market, I mean, unless you're a great big company, you vitally need this information that Gary has. I wouldn't know how to start, frankly, and the first thing I would want to do is read your book. Could you tell everyone how to get your book and how to learn more about this?
Yes, it's available on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com, and all the bookstores, if they don't have it, they can order it. And it's available on my website, www.garybronga.com, GaryBronga.com, and that free booklet is there as well.
And the book, again, is Bringing a Product to Market from Home, right?
Yes, and it's subtitled with $500 and an idea you can make millions, because I actually started by committing just $500.
And you made millions and sold millions.
It's not people have the wrong impression that they have to go out and borrow $25,000-$50,000 to start a business. I believe in starting slow and testing as you go. Test prices, test colors, test whether a product. The old saying goes, you got to make sure the dog will eat the dog food. You can't go out and create something and spend a fortune only to find out it doesn't sell.
That is so true. I mean, you've really given everyone some great advice today. And if you didn't get that website, it's GaryBronga.com, GaryBronga. And anybody that has something they want to sell, especially working from home, I think it's vital that you get this information. Gary, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Welcome back to the show. I'm really thrilled to have A.J. Carosi on the line. He's quite an accomplished singer, entertainer. He happens to be the son of a pretty famous singer as well, but we're not here to talk about him. AJ, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Great. You really have done quite a bit yourself. Can you tell us a little bit about some of your music and some of the things that you're doing?
I'm doing all kinds of stuff. Right now, I am in the middle of a project called 12 Tales, where I'm traveling around the country and I'm recording 12 songs with 6 different producers. Two songs apiece, like an old 45, with each producer, and then releasing one single a month on iTunes. And this has been going since January. So
that's wonderful.
As of today, we're on the 6th single. So the first producer that I worked with was a guy named Kevin Killen, who's an Irish producer. We worked in Connecticut, just outside of New York. And he's known for Elvis Costello and Peter Gabriel and all kinds of interesting music. And then the next producer I worked with was someone I've known for a really long time and sort of a legend in Tennessee. His name is Cowboy Jack Clement, and he produced two songs. He was the house producer at Sun Records. He's 81 years old, and was there for and produced Carl Perkins and Jerry Lee Lewis and Roy Orbison and Elvis, and of course, most notably for 50 years, he worked with Johnny Cash.
Well, I've been listening to some of your music, and I think you're really good. You know, you're of a different style than your dad. Your father's Jim Croce, a bad yeah. Leroy Brown, Time in a Bottle. But I like your style, and you're not mimicking him, which I think is great.
No, I mean, you hear the similarities in certain influences, like Leroy Brown or You Don't Mess Around with Jim, have that sort of Lee Brent-Stoller influence, you know, that R&B influence.
But you do have your own style, which I like.
Absolutely, and I'm first and foremost a piano player. And
how are you? I'm a piano player myself.
Are you?
Yeah.
So that's how I got my start. You know, was playing playing jazz and playing blues and R&B and soul in different bands, rock and roll, and so I've been on this sort of odyssey with 12 Tales. It's taken me all over the country. Got to work with one of my very biggest heroes, Alan Toussaint, on two songs. One of which comes out today. It's a song I wrote with Leon Russell called "Rolling On," and so that's available today.
That is wonderful, I like your singing. You know, I took a flight once not too long ago. Well, it was quite a long time ago, and Frank Sinatra Jr. was sitting next to me.
Uh-huh.
But he was nothing but trying to work in the shadow of his father. But you have evolved yourself in your own image, which I think is wonderful.
Well, it's hard to to do that when people can't see beyond who you're related to.
But you did it. Liza Minnelli did it. You did it. Michael Douglas, of course.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely, you know, it took me a long time, but it took me, you know, 20 years of touring and not playing any of his music or taking any questions about him for that to work at all.
Now, are you doing most of the recording in Nashville today?
No, and like I said, all of these things are recorded in different cities. So,
oh, I see.
So Kevin Killen, that was done just outside of New York. The one with Alan Toussaint was done in New Orleans. The one with Cowboy Jack Clement was done at his studio in Nashville. The next one will be with Mitchell Froom in Los Angeles.
Well, that's wonderful.
And then I think I'll be in Chicago after that.
So you're really running the whole country.
I am. It's, you know, it's a pretty ambitious deal. It's been really challenging logistically, and then really satisfying to be able to work with new players. Everything is, this has cost, you know, five times.
Are you playing piano on the records as well? Are you playing piano too?
Oh, yeah.
Singing.
yeah, everything's pretty much recorded live because I'm recording a song, you know, or two songs in the day and then mixing the next day in most cases.
And are you from originally from Los Angeles?
No, I'm from Philadelphia originally.
Oh, okay. Where the American Bandstand started.
Yeah, I was born in Bryn Mawr because it was close to the Main Point, which is where my dad used to play all the time, so it was convenient.
So you have it in your blood, but you do have your own style and your own way to play, which I think is wonderful. How can people learn more about you? If you got a website, if you got something you can direct to
audience
to?
Oh, absolutely. You can go to ajcrochemusic.com. You can go to, you know, look me up on Wikipedia. You can find my music in, a lot of retail outlets as well as on iTunes. You can go to seedlingrecords.com. That's like a SEEDLING, records.com. You can like me on Facebook and get posts and hear more there.
And you've had some pretty good press from Rolling Stone, I read, too.
Yeah, Yeah, that
was
great.
Really
that
good.
Was from the last CD, and it seems like, you know, this one's going to do even better. So I'm really optimistic. You know, we just I won this songwriting contest. I didn't even know that I had forgotten that I had entered, and I won the grand prize. And the grand prize of this songwriting contest was free radio, and it happened while I was free radio for 5 weeks. So part of I didn't expect much to happen with 5 weeks of radio. It's not a long amount of promotion, but I couldn't afford to do it otherwise, and it's working out. I mean, it's charted, and the first single on 12 Tales is now on the AC charts, the top 40 charts, and it's really positive.
That is wonderful. What song was that you won the prize for?
I won the prize for a song called I Should Have Known, which was on a record called Cantos. And the song that is charting right now is the first song on 12 Tales. It's called Right on Time.
And you're singing it and performing it.
Yeah, I'm playing Fender Rhodes on that and organ on that as well. And then and I'm singing it live. It's what you hear is what's happening in the studio.
Well, that is wonderful, and I can't wait to follow your career, and it's already doing fabulous. And thank you so much for being on our show, AJ.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it is my pleasure, believe me. Have a wonderful, wonderful day, and we'll everybody keep listening to AJ's music.
Once again, that was AJ Carosi. Now enjoy his new release, Right on Time, available everywhere, including iTunes.
Softly spoken words awaken, simply said, simply taken. More or less is all the same. Less is more unless it's fame. There isn't wrong, there isn't right. Shades of darkness, shades of light. New beginnings, old regrets. It's worth forgiving, one forgets. I bought a photo book picture of a man. Never get to break. It's like a little memento of the past, and the memories are to take. And every time I look into the mirror, I see another line. If life won't take me first, then death will take me right on time. Strong impression. When you make your own decisions, then you're sure to learn your lessons. Faith can take you just so far. You've got to find out who you are. Then you must accept with grace that reflection that you face. Bought a photo booth picture of a man who never gets a break. Like a little memento of the past, and the memories are hard to take. And every time I look into the mirror, I see another life. If life won't take me first, then death will take me right on. Life won't take me first.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Folks, we're back, and I'm really excited to have Carl David on the phone. Carl's quite an interesting man, and he's written a very serious book that I think we all need to look into. It's about coping, I think, with suicide in the family. Am I right, Carl?
You're absolutely right, Stuart.
Can you tell us a little bit about the experience that you went through?
Sure. It's painful still even today, although this was in 1965. I lost a brother to suicide when I was 16. He was 22.
That's horrible.
And there were no signs, no notes, nothing. So we were completely blindsided, having had the idyllic American 1960s family. This was an event that just turned all of our world black in an instant and took a long, long time from which to recover. And actually, you don't ever recover. You just learn to live with it as best you can.
You had no warning signs events. When that happened?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Nope, nothing at all.
My goodness. You know, I think the people that are always threatening to do something probably don't. But it's the people like your brother that just silently keep things inside of them.
Yeah, it leaves a scar and the wonderment of, you know, should we have seen something? Was something awry that we missed? You know, and you live without answers. But, you know, it is what it is. Even if we had the answers, it wouldn't bring them back.
No, and you probably went through guilt of what did you do wrong? I would imagine that would be a natural feeling.
Exactly. I think the horror is the first feeling. Then there's guilt. And then there is, you know, what could we have done had we known about it? And then there's just coping after that, you know, and hoping that it gets better every day, which with time and professional help, it does.
How did you arrange to reconcile this in your mind?
Well, first our family pulled together. You know, we could have gone either way and just shredded each other, but we didn't. We pulled together. We were a close family, and we all had professional help. I had the benefit of, years later, albeit, a psychoanalysis, which saved my life because I had this thing festering inside me, at times avoiding the reality of it and imagining that it never even happened. And my parents had professional help. I mean, they had, good friends who were in the psychiatric field, and my brother the same. And that's, you know, basically this is a beast that's way too powerful to try and tackle by yourself. It's nearly impossible.
That's right. And, you know, so many people have tragedies in their lives, whether it may be not quite this horrible or sometimes even worse, and they look to substances and other escape mechanisms where really I think professional help is what is needed.
Yes, I've seen a lot of people who have gone through this experience just give up and not be able to handle it and just go down. And, you know, that's one of the fears that you have after you endure an experience. It's like a scar from a war wound after seeing some horror that, you know, if you don't get help to cope with it, it can destroy you.
And your brother was 22 years old, just in the prime of his
22.
Life.
He was 22. Yeah. Yeah, and his army unit was about to go off to Vietnam, which is maybe one of the things we try and attribute the level of stress that he succumbed to. We don't know, you know, but it was a time when kids were being brought back in body bags, and the press was really portraying a devastation of war like none that we'd seen before. And he may have freaked out, you know.
I don't know when it happened, but they were coming back and being spit on. I remember that.
Yep. Exactly.
Where they were really heroes.
They chose, right. Exactly, they were.
Well, in the book that you've written, it's called Bader Field. What's the name of your book?
It's called Bader Field, How My Family Survived Suicide.
I see.
And the title is derived from a little airport outside of Atlantic City, which is now defunct, called Bader Field, where my dad and I used to fly in and out of all the time. And,
I flew into that once a long time ago.
Wow, small world.
On the Allegheny commuter, I remember that.
Oh, my God, yeah. but that's the last place I saw my father, so at the time it was, you know, the right title for it. Today, I'm not sure I would title it. I think I would just call it How My Family Survived Suicide, because until we branded it with that subtitle, no one really knew what was within the pages.
No, I wouldn't imagine. They thought it was probably about an airplane or something.
Or a baseball field, if you didn't know. Right.
And how can people get your book, Carl?
The book is available online everywhere. It's in the Apple iBookstore. It's on the Kindle, the Nook, Kobo. It's on my website, which is www.carledavid.com. And if you just do a search for Bader Field, How My Family Survived Suicide, or Bader Field by Carl David, it'll come up in a myriad of places. It's, I think, $7.99 to download it. I even downloaded it on my tablet. And the soft copy is, I think, $15.99 or something through the publishers. And it's out there. It's available. And it's a really important read. It's very inspirational, downtrodden as it sounds. And it's a tough read, but it is uplifting.
Well, I think it's an important read because no matter who you are, no one's immune from something like this happening in their family. As you say, there was no warning signs, and it just happened.
It did. 1 million people a year worldwide take their life. It's a staggering statistic. I mean, there are more deaths by suicide than homicide and auto accidents and breast cancer. I mean, it's a scary statistic.
That's horrible.
People don't talk about it.
No, they don't. They push it under the carpet. And in your case, I think everyone needs to read this book because the importance of when tragedies hit you, of getting the right kind of help and not going off the deep end yourself is pretty important.
Exactly. You know, my mission on this book is twofold. One, to reach anybody who might be on that edge of devastation, if they're in their right mind at all and can think logically and clearly, which a lot of times when someone's that depressed cannot, to let them know they're not alone, they're loved, and there's help out there for today. This is not the 1960s anymore where you look the other way at such an ugly act. And also to help people who have gone through it, as our family did, to let them know that we do survive, but there are coping tools that you need to use to get to that point. It's not easy.
No, it can't be easy. Well, Carl, I can't thank you enough for being on the show, and I think you have a very inspirational and important message for everyone, certainly for people that have suffered like you have, and everybody never knows what turns are going to take in life. You just never know what's around the corner.
No, you don't. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you
so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank
you. My pleasure.
Bye.
I believe that myself.
Aren't you ashamed?
Good night, until we meet again. Adios, au revoir, I'll be the same.
That's all, folks.